The Island Digest is a sampling of the stories in this week's Journal of the San Juans, Islands Sounder and Islands Weekly, which are on newsstands now. The February 7th edition is brought to you by Orcas Center. I'm Caleb Summers. Headlines from the week of February 7th, 2024. A Life with Color. Sydney Harris and Jesse Powers share their love story. FHHS students place in NASA Tech Rise Challenge. Northern Flying Squirrels of San Juan. Remington Calvo Wilson is first island baby of the year. First, from the Islands Sounder, A Life with Color, Sydney Harris and Jesse Powers share their love story. By Colleen Smith Summers. Sydney Harris and Jesse Powers were living parallel existences for decades before they found each other. Both women, who are now in their 30s, grew up in religious families and married men shortly after high school. Powers, an Alaska native, is the mom of two children and spent her days leading homeschooling classes. Harris, who grew up on Orcas, also has two kids and was a stay-at-home parent. "We had a clear picture of how our lives were supposed to look," said Harris, whose father is a pastor. "We both loved our families and our faith communities, and we wanted to embrace that life. And we tried really hard, but there was always a part that didn't feel whole. We did it so right, but we felt so wrong." In 2022, Harris came out to her husband, children, and family. Thousands of miles north, Powers did the same. "We chose ourselves at the risk of losing everything, and there has been some heartbreak along the way," Harris said. "Strangely, we were doing the same work in separate parts of the world." Powers left Alaska to stay in Seattle for a few months, flying home to Anchorage periodically to see her children. She went on a handful of dates, but didn't feel attracted to anyone. It was during a visit home that Powers went on a dating app to show her friend how few prospects were available in their area. She kept increasing the app's radius to illustrate her point. After returning to Seattle, she forgot to change the radius back to a smaller region. And it was then that Harris, living on a tiny island 4 hours away, popped up on her screen. "It was a total accident that we matched," Powers said. "I hated Seattle. I was lonely, and I was about to move back to Alaska, so when we started texting, I just laid it all out there." Harris says it was Powers' refreshing honesty that swept her away. "Within the first 5 minutes, it was a chilling feeling. Everything I had dreamt about since I was a little girl was coming true," she said. After several weeks of communicating online, Harris headed to Seattle for a date with Powers on December 30th. Neither believed their connection would be real in person. "Everything we felt in those messages, we then felt times 10, Harris remembers. The two shared their first kiss in a minivan, which they joke was apropos given their lives spent as mothers. Both say it was the best first kiss ever. Harris had been shopping that day for New Year's Eve party favors, which included miniature trophies. After their smooch, she handed one of the trophies to Powers in honor of her first time making a move on a woman. 1 year later, they gifted regular-size, personally engraved trophies to each other without the other's knowledge in honor of that special day. Over the next 2 months, they continued to see each other and communicate from afar. Powers moved to the island, taking a job as a barista at Orcas Island Market, where Harris is the customer engagement coordinator. "We didn't want to waste any more time without one another. Then there was a lot of work to meld our lives together," said Harris, who shares joint custody with her 9-year-old son, Brandon, and 7-year-old daughter, Ellie, who is special needs. Powers' daughter, Jules, is 15, and her son, Weston, is 11, and they currently reside in Alaska and come to Orcas for long visits. Initially, Jules was skeptical of her mother's new life. We were part of a strict homeschool Christian community, and I had taught my children that being gay is a sin, Powers shared. We asked them to come visit and see for themselves. Whatever they decided, we would honor. We didn't force anything on them. Now, the four children are close and refer to one another as siblings. They hope to live together full-time on Orcus. Our love speaks for itself, Powers said. My daughter recently stood up in her church to call them hypocrites because it is against Christian values to not accept everyone. Added Harris, we are showing our kids what it looks like to be brave and choose yourself. This past September, in another serendipitous moment, Powers and Harris secretly bought each other rings and planned proposals. They both said yes and hope to marry this year. As they've navigated a year of significant change, they are doing it together. We are learning the step-parent component, and we are learning how to be queer women in the world, Harris said. The couple say they expected some bigotry on Orcus, but have experienced little on the island since coming out. Instead, they have endured objectifying, sexualized comments from community members about their new status as a couple, which they did not anticipate. I have never been so targeted as I am now, Harris said. We have very public jobs. It's been hard. In their downtime, they've been working on their pickleball game. Both women are athletes with a fierce competitive streak. Every morning, the two wake up early so they have extra time to lie in bed, drink coffee, and talk. They have one day off together, Sunday, and it is a cherished, sacred day. We're obsessed with each other, Powers said. We love working together. We love just being together. As Harris says, we both knew we were meant for a grand love story. From the Journal of the San Juan Islands, Friday Harbor High School Students Place in NASA TechRise Challenge by Isabel Ashley. On January 23rd, NASA announced the 60 winning teams in their third annual TechRise Challenge, including four students from Friday Harbor High School. This year's TechRise Challenge invited teams of 6th to 12th grade students from private, public, and charter schools across the country to create their own project proposal to be launched on a high-altitude balloon or rocket-powered lander. Winning teams receive $1,500 to build their projects, mentorship from NASA engineer advisors, and are tested on a NASA-sponsored commercial flight. Last September, FHHS CTE teacher Sam Garson informed his students of the competition and encouraged them to participate. Kira Clark, Jr., Grayson Matthews, sophomore, Megan Mellinger, Jr., and Flora Vaughn, sophomore, rose to the challenge and began working on their proposal. As the first group of FHHS students to participate in the TechRise Challenge, each of them holds a special interest in science and engineering, and were eager for more real-world application. I have always loved science, and I wanted to get more into engineering, said Mellinger. I figured it would be a great hands-on way to actually experience the engineering process. I feel like in science classes you memorize a bunch of facts, but that's not really the process of science, said Vaughn. That's what really appeals to me with projects like these. The group began meeting weekly on their own time to discuss their project. Since they are all members of TSA, Technology Student Association, it made it easy for them to commune after the club's Wednesday meetings. The group also shares many classes together, making it convenient to discuss their project during these classes at lunch or in the library. NASA provides a variety of different resources and brainstorming materials to get the students started on the challenge, but a majority of the project requires additional research. Matthews mentioned his gratitude for the teachers who offered their guidance during the process. We have really good teachers here. If you have an idea, they can try to point out any flaws and what you may be trying to accomplish, or otherwise make suggestions, said Matthews. The TechRise Challenge proposes numerous experiment ideas for students to consider, including experiments on thermodynamics, greenhouse gases, air quality, and more. The FHHS team chose to explore radiation and the ability of different materials to reflect or shield against radiation and UV rays. They were interested in radiation shielding and its application in space travel and missions, as astronauts are exposed to intense UV levels when they are working outside of a spacecraft. Additionally, the group is interested in applying their research to radiation shielding in medical facilities, such as X-ray radiation and the use of reflection and shielding on roofs to maintain cooler temperatures in buildings. After 2 months of collaboration, the team submitted their final proposal by November 13th, and they waited another 2 months for the results. The students were ecstatic to receive recognition for their efforts on a national level, being selected as one of 30 teams to have their project be launched from a high-altitude balloon and receive funding and guidance from NASA professionals. "It's really awesome to see all of our work paying off, despite there being bumps in the road," said Vaughn. On a similar note, Matthews commented, "We get told about so many opportunities to compete in, so it's really inspiring for us and other students at our school to show that you can win these competitions and that your effort does pay off." Clark mentioned her anticipation in progressing forward with the project and reporting their findings. "I'm really excited to see what kind of data we can collect and what the results are. I think it's awesome that we get to actually complete the experiment," said Clark. In terms of next steps, the students and Mr. Garson had their first meeting with their NASA mentors the week following the announcement of the winners, outlining the process from now until the experiment launch this summer, as well as deciding when to hold their weekly touch base with the NASA engineers. They also have access to a guideline that includes weekly benchmarks they should be reaching throughout the project's construction. According to the team, their first steps involve planning how to assemble their project, gathering needed materials, and figuring out how they will be sending their data. As the educator sponsor for the team, Garson is incredibly impressed and proud of the students and their efforts, and is excited that students have been getting involved in different competitions in recent years. "More and more students are starting to respond to opportunities and see that even on our rural little island, we compete on a national level. Our students are pretty incredible human beings who get recognition for the hard work they do," said Garson. "It's every teacher's dream to be like, 'Hey, here's this opportunity,' and to watch them run with it." The team has until mid-May to complete and submit their project, and it will be displayed at a winner's showcase before it is launched on a NASA high-altitude balloon this summer. In the meantime, the students will balance coursework, athletics, and other extracurricular activities on top of constructing their project, going above and beyond expectations. As Matthews put it, "Apart from what you learn from the process and the academic credibility you gain from it, it is also a testament to your character. You're actively working to progress yourself." In county news, Remington Calvo Wilson is First Island Baby of the Year by Heather Spaulding. Love can be found in the most unlikely places, including grocery stores. Coral Wilson and Daniel Calvo met at Marketplace, where Calvo worked. January 6th, they welcomed their newborn, Remington Calvo Wilson. He is the couple's first child, and being the first baby born on San Juan Island in 2024 that the Journal is aware of, won the baby derby. "I was surprised because I had been told I couldn't have kids," Wilson said, "but I was excited he was going to make an appearance." Wilson grew up on the island, Remington's grandmother on Wilson's side is Bobby Wilson. Calvo moved here from Tacoma, and Remington's grandmother on Calvo's side is Kim Ryan. Remington was born in Anacortes, weighing 7 pounds, 2 ounces, and 19 inches long. Neither the pregnancy nor the birth was particularly easy. Wilson needed a C-section. "I'm healing great and feeling almost back to normal," she assured the journal. Remington is also doing well, though one of the lessons he has already taught his parents is to advocate for his health. "He had a little bit of a weight drop at one point," Wilson said. As a result, doctors wanted to do some fairly invasive testing, against Wilson's motherly instinct. "I finally stood up and said to them they needed to listen to me." The couple are hoping to guide him away from smartphones, tablets, and whatever technological gadgets are out there as he grows. "I really want him to do 4-H, get into the sciences, and get back to the basics, to island roots," Wilson said. Calvo is thrilled at the idea of teaching his son to fish, in keeping with the getting back to basics concept. "He taught me fishing last summer," Wilson said, and the couple has continued to fish together since. As winners of the Baby Derby, the new family will receive gift certificates from Walmart, the San Juan Co-op, Island Petroleum, Be Chic, and the Journal of the San Juans. Congratulations, Calvo Wilson family. From the Islands Weekly, Northern Flying Squirrels of San Juan, by Russell Barsh, Quiot.
"It's a bird! It's a bat! No, it's a flying squirrel!"
In the hills that stretch across San Juan Island from Lakedale to Katy Mountain and Mount Dallas on San Juan, you may catch a glimpse of a small, dark and silent silhouette hurtling across a moonlit night sky framed by trees. Few islanders have actually seen a northern flying squirrel. Occasionally, one of these charming chipmunk-sized mammals miscalculates its trajectory and sails through an open window, drops into an uncovered outdoor trash barrel or bin. Outdoor cats sometimes collect them. But it has taken Quiot researchers more than a decade to document their presence and habits on the island, and to learn how and when they may have arrived from the mainland, where they live in small, isolated communities. Motion-triggered cameras, baited with nuts, have yielded only a few fuzzy snapshots of flying squirrels since the search for them began. Researchers also examined thousands of acorns lying on the ground in the Gary Oak woodland on Mount Young. Flying squirrels are known to push acorns into the ground to cache them for future use, in a way that provides a species-specific signature. Like birds, flying squirrels can be located and identified acoustically as well. They screech and sing at the same high frequencies as bats, far above the range of human hearing. Quiot researchers used the same ultrasound recorders to monitor the nocturnal activities of flying squirrels as well as bats. Like other members of the squirrel family, flyers have broad, opportunistic diets, enjoying mushrooms and nuts in the autumn and winter, fruits and seeds in summer, and helping themselves to gardens and compost piles where available. Their penchant for burying acorns makes them key players in the spread and renewal of Gary Oaks. San Juan Island once also had Steller's Jays, which cache acorns beneath logs and rocks, but since the 1930s, the natural dispersal of oaks on the island has relied entirely on flyers. At the same time, home building has been disturbing more of the old Douglas fir stands where the flyers nest, and introducing more predatory pets to flyers' foraging grounds. Northern flying squirrels were first introduced on San Juan Island only in the 1980s. Were they introduced? Or are flyers native to the island, but too shy, nocturnal, and scarce to be familiar to islanders? Southern flying squirrels have been in the pet trade for years, but they are a genetically distinct, separate species from northern flyers. It is difficult to imagine people bringing northern flying squirrels to the islands for any other reason. They are a bit too large and feisty to be overlooked in a truckload of garden plants, a frequent invasion route for insects, slugs, and snails. How and when did these charming little squirrels make their way to San Juan Island? They did not fly here. At best, they can glide about 150 feet between trees. Nor did they swim. Like many other small native mammals and reptiles, they most likely arrived on rafts of woody debris washed down the Fraser or Skagit rivers on spring floods. I personally witnessed rafts of debris floating down the Oldman River in Alberta 30 years ago, carrying bears, raccoons, and other furry passengers towards Saskatchewan. Before commercial logging shrank our great coastal forests and the Coast Guard began clearing away log jams and drifting woody debris to protect shipping, rafts were much more common around Salish Sea bays and estuaries, and along the paths cut by tides and currents around the San Juan Islands. Two great watersheds empty into Georgia Basin, the central Salish Sea, the Fraser from the north and the Skagit from the east. Lopez and Blakely are directly in the path of the Skagit outflow. The annual Fraser outflow is an order of magnitude greater than the Skagit, large enough to affect the salinity of the seas around Waldron and North San Juan in late spring to early summer when mountain snowmelt augments the river's flows. Statistically, the odds are on rafting down the Fraser, but Skagit rafts have also unloaded living cargo in the islands. This is the best explanation we have for why Lopez, of all the islands, has a well-established population of Townsend's chipmunks. The Island Digest apologizes for this week not having any interesting crime to report on. Come back next week for more. We're sure something will happen. And this concludes the February 7th edition of The Island Digest. The Island Digest is brought to you by Orcas Center. Orcas Center is your place for fun and intrigue this winter with live concerts, performances, art openings, and more. To check out upcoming events and purchase tickets, visit www.orcascenter.org. Thank you for listening to the Island Digest, a small sampling of what's in your local print newspapers this week. The Journal, Sounder, and Weekly rely upon advertising, subscriptions, and donations to support our mission of high-quality community journalism. To contribute, visit our websites or email publisher Colleen Smith-Summers at csmith@soundpublishing.com. Thanks for tuning in. And come back next week for more local news from San Juan County, Washington. I'm Caleb Summers.